Accession number 26845, Reel 7.
Mr. Bennett, Reel 7. We were talking about the time when you'd arrived slightly early with escorting a group of the assault craft off Salerno in early September 1943. So what exactly happened then, as you remember it, the landing?
Well, we were in 24 hours advance, and we were what you might call sitting ducks, really. We couldn't understand us being there, waiting all day long. 24 hours, if you like, before we went in and, at dawn. I know that we were all sunbathing on the upper deck. I mean, we were just sitting there going one or two knots in the middle of the med, like. And these aircraft were up above, going round, and...
Which are German aircraft?
Well, yes, we heard the aircraft, and of course, with it being very still, no engine movement or anything, it was you could hear very clearly, so you could shout down. Actually, you could shout down from the bridge, and or vice versa. And the warning came up about the aircraft, and this, and the shout came back. All right, but they're ours. And then all of a sudden, there were the Stukas come zoom dive bombing us.
They were Stukas, were they?
Well, I think they were Stukas. They made such a hell of a noise. And they were the type that carried a bomb under each wing. And he released the bombs on... Well, we were the only big ship there at any size. All the others were little flat-bottom assault craft. So when he released them, there was one bomb went one side of us and one the other. And the spray came inboard. They were that close... that the spray came inboard. I was actually I wasn't on duty that particular time.
And where were you?
I was on the after gun deck. And there was a big scarper. Action station sounded, and it didn't come to anything. After that, of course, there was a lot of gunfire. Anti-aircraft fire, and so there was nothing else happened until the actual assault.
And how that would be next day, would it? I mean, all
yeah, that would be that morning following early, 5 o'clock, 3, 4, 5 o'clock, whatever it was.
And we went
in, fired just across the beachhead there. Bombarded the Greece, and of course there were other ships then, they fire over the top of you, of course, when you're doing landings like that, the bigger ships, bigger guns, they plaster the place, and the shells are going over the top of you. But we were mainly there to support the commandos, so we did quite, I think it's, we used a hell of a lot of ammunition on that particular one.
What was it like below decks when the guns were firing like that?
Well, a lot of banging and vibrations. And
you could definitely tell then.
Oh yes, no doubt about that. Oh yes, and when the guns go off, it shakes the whole ship. It's essential that some of the machinery is pegged. We termed it as pegging. It's to stop the vibration causing a trip on a governor or anything that's being governed by pressure or anything of that nature. It has to be sealed off so that it doesn't trip.
How did you do that?
Well, you put what the term is a peg. It's secured so that the trip can't come into operation. For instance, the turbo generators are oil governed, and if you had a lot of vibration, the trip would come in and the machine would shut down. So you have to keep the trip in so that those things can't take place. So that's one of the first things that you do on action station sounding.
Anything else you had to do, or was that it?
Only follow instructions.
So, anything? What's the next thing after that? How long were you off Salerno?
Well, as long as about 3 or 4 days, I think we were going up and following up the coast and bombarding any opposition that we were given a range of. Other ships were, of course, doing that as well. But
were you attacked again, or was that it?
It was always a snag on the aircraft coming down, but no, we weren't. It wasn't too bad on from that point of view. Once the initial invasion started off, it was not too bad. Yeah.
Now, you then seem to have been on for a period on Mediterranean convoys, escorting or covering by either both. Anything in this period? Where would you be based, and what were these convoys like?
We were based a lot in Malta, actually. We did very little, although it gives officially we were based at Algiers. Most of our servicing and everything else was done in Malta.
And what were these convoys like as a routine?
Well, it could be one or two ships. It could be, it could be just the supply ships. It could even be a big ship, cruiser or
had most of the risk gone now by this time?
They'd been reduced from that point of view because Germany had its hands full protecting the troops that we were attacking, if you like. There was quite a hell of a delay in Monte Cassino. There was quite a big delay in there, and we used to go ashore in Naples and meet some of the army people there that gave us some terrible information about Monte Cassino. So that was the main source of conversation at that time.
How did you get on with the army lads?
Very well. Very well. The Navy have always got a sense of humour that can agitate them a bit. It was always a friendly.
It's a wind up then, not serious.
No. I never ever got into serious problems with the services.
Now, anything else you remember about your time in the Mediterranean? Because the next thing seems to be when you sank a submarine.
We get a percentage of a submarine. You don't always. If there's two ships attacking a submarine, there's so much percentage is attached to each ship. One ship might have dropped the depth charge, but the two ships combined have been doing the attacking, so.
There's two of these, one in March, 8th of March 1944, when it's U-450, and that was actually forced to the surface and the crew were captured.
That's right.
That's the first. What do you remember of that one?
I don't remember much about that because I was below, I think, at the time of the action and that.
But
I do remember the one in up North Africa where we were steaming along and come across this American destroyer who had the stern blown up, it was curled up. The stern was curled right the way up, you could see the screw. It had been torpedoed by a German submarine in this case.
That would be the U-371,
I think it would be, yes.
That's the 4th of May 1944.
Yeah, I think it would be, because we were actually going to jib, I think, at that particular time. We're all cursing because we'd had another interruption from the action that we'd been through, and now we've got another one where we were on our way back to jib. But it made a beeline for the North African coast. I do remember this. And our skipper was senior in this instance, so he would give the orders to any action that was to be taking place. And what happened is that the other destroyer was given a course to patrol. The German sub had gone to ground in a big wide bay, great big wide bay, a very wide bay, and our skipper put the patrols, went from the centre to the outer edges and then back to the centre again. And the reason for that was that the submarine would think that when we were on the furthest point away, he would make a dash for it. And this is what did what happened. This is what happened. A few patrols across the bay, and a German sub came up and made a dash for. And there, sitting in the middle with everything stopped, was this French gunboat. So all the gunboat had to do was just pop it off when it came up. So he got full marks for that one, our skipper did.
And they took four, they took half the, well, some of the crew prisoners as well.
Well, we took a very high proportion of that.
Did you see any of them? Did they come aboard your ship? Or
being senior, yeah. The sub made another dive and went to and grounded, and the other destroyer was given the job of collecting the prisoners.
But not you?
No. Well, we were on our way to Gib anyway, so they picked up the prisoners.
So that was two shares. Was it very important to you to have, I mean, was there any celebrating when you've taken part in these things?
Not really. I don't think there was any. There was a relief that we'd, okay, got another one. But, you know, deep down in anybody's mind is that when you are releasing depth charges, and dropping a pattern of depth charges, and you can just imagine what it would be like in a submarine down below with all these, and when all said and done.
What was it like when the depth charges went off for you? Because you were below water as well.
Yeah, well, you get a tremendous bang on you on the plates. You get a tremendous bump. In fact, you can see the repercussion of this when you go in dry dock. Because you go in dry dock and look down the ship's bottom, and it looks like a corrugated sheet. From where the ribs are, you know, to the in between the ribs, it's dented in where the pressure of the water, through bad weather or depth charges. So it's anything but a flat surface when you go below.
Now, one thing is, did you still have the same officers? I mean, because you know you're on the ship quite a long time. I mean, it was Captain Powlett and Lieutenant Welsh. Were they with you continually? And
Bromley. Bromley was the second one. Lieutenant Welsh was a first lieutenant, wasn't he?
Oh, right.
The second skipper for the Italian campaign was Bromley.
And what was Bromley like? Was it a lieutenant commander again? Or was
yes, a lieutenant commander, yeah.
And what did you think of him?
He was very much like the other one, very efficient. We had no problems with the skipper. Strict again, but a very good seaman. We all had confidence in Bromley.
So no better, no worse.
No better, no worse. So Bromley was a very good skipper.
So you were
skipper.
Lucky to get two good
two
skippers.
Two good skippers, yes.
Anybody else new on the ship? Well, that was important to you. I mean,
yes.
You'd had Tiffin, your engine room.
Yeah.
Engine room officer Tiffin.
Well, Tiffin left us when we were in. Actually, we were in Grimsby. I think. Yeah, we were in Grimsby at the time, just oiling ship or doing something, and unfortunately, he walked down the wrong side of the gangway. You know, a destroyer's gangway is very small, and the handrail on the gangway only went down one side of the gangway, and unfortunately he went down the wrong side and went and fell in the dock, and There was a fender there beneath the gangway, so he injured himself very fairly badly on that and had to be put ashore. And in the end, he never come back. He never come back to. We sailed without him. And in the end, we got another engineer who was Canellato.
How do you spell that? Sorry.
Canellato with a K. Kin. K-I-N. I-L. A-T. Oh, I think it was Canellato.
It's an unusual name.
Yes. Geordie. And he's the chap who used to borrow my violin to play jigs down the wardroom. He used to come and...
What was he like as a...
Canellato was a very jovial type.
He was your senior officer.
Yes, engineer officer. Fishing ship. And the three watch keepers were fairly good. We had two senior ERAs. One was ERA Sheffield, who served on the Exeter.
What was he like?
He was a very active service man, very knowledgeable and edgy. I had him to thank for me when I was charged with breaking ship and one thing or another.
We haven't had that story yet.
No.
Was that late on, or when was that?
That was when we come back from... just before D-Day, we changed skippers.
We're coming up to that soon. Yeah, so it's ERA Sheffield, he was a good sort then.
Oh yes, he was very knowledgeable and was very helpful in my training as well. You know,
was he senior to you or the same?
Oh, he was
rank?
Senior to me. No, senior.
And what the other ERAs?
Well, we had another Geordie aboard who was senior, and then I had. Well, they were all senior to me because they had the tickets before me.
And were they all good?
Yes, they were all pretty good, yeah.
They knew this stuff as... I mean, they had
yes,
the technical...
Yes, we were efficient. And we used to follow one another up without any troubles or complaints. You know, following another rating when you're responsible for all the engineering space... they could leave you in the dark about the odd thing, not to tell you what was going on, and then you'd have to find out yourself and things, but no, we were very good when it come to that.
So they'd brief each other properly?
Yes.
And you all had, was your technical knowledge up to their level, or were you a bit their junior?
It was below their level. Because they were active service people and had more experience. But I learned fast. I was pretty good. I was fairly competent down the engine room.
Now, in May 44, you seem to leave the Mediterranean just shortly after the sinking of that ship, probably after Jib, you came back from there. So, and you came back to England, where you had a boiler clean at Portsmouth. Now, was that a boiler clean that you would be doing, or would it be a boiler clean that the harbour would be doing?
It'd be 50-50, because we would be responsible for the examination of the boilers and everything else. We'd be responsible for the job, but we'd get help from the dockyard.
And this is a process you described to me last time, I think. Is that...
Yeah.
We don't need...
No, you don't need to go that way, no, I don't think.
So... Now the next thing is just before D-Day then, which is where we are, is where you run into trouble. What happened there? Why did you break ship? What happened?
Well, we'd had leave. We were in Portsmouth, I think. Yeah, we were in Portsmouth. And we changed skippers. Bromley left.
Who came instead?
And Lieutenant Brown had come aboard ship.
Just a lieutenant?
Yeah. So at that time, I'd gone on leave with two more ERAs, and when I came back off leave, there was an acting fourth in doing duty, and I told him to go, he'd not been ashore, So I told him to get his togs on, go ashore and have a few drinks, because we could well be going out the next day, who knows. So I would look out. In other words, I would take over any duties that would be required. And I told him to go ashore and have a few pints, because somebody, it was his duty, but he'd passed it on to this ERA to, when it wasn't his duty really. So I bundled him off, told him to get going. And I changed my gear from number ones, and I was with another acting ERA in the mess. And when I'd done that, I looked round to see what the duties were required, what state of the ship was in. The state of the ship is always down, always registered. But when I looked round, there was no one on the gangway, there was no PO, there was no officer of the day knocking about. I went down to the I went down the engine rooms, and there was everything was in darkness, if you like, just emergency lights. There was no machinery running, and I went down to the stoker's mess to find out what they were doing, because they have fire parties. The stokers always did the fire party. And when I went in the mess, they said, what are you doing here, Lofty? I said, well, somebody said that an ERA was required aboard, you know. The ERA had said that there was an ERA aboard. And I said, I can't see any reason for one being aboard. You know, the Bible, the Tippy's Bible, has tells you the state of the ships and what's required, and as far as the ERA's Bible's concerned, there didn't need to be one. We were on shore lighting and shore services. So I went back again and had a look round, couldn't find anything, so I said to my shipmate there, come on, we'll have a couple of pints and back again. So while I was away, someone wanted an ERA, and there wasn't one aboard. And it seems, at that time then, it seemed that the captain of the ship, the captain, not the officer, not the engineer officer, the captain had said that an ERA was required aboard the ship, but with no orders, no reason for it or anything, you see. So when I came aboard, all hell was let loose. They were asking for me, and I was to report to the engineer officer immediately. So I did that, and it was this Canelato who then apologised and said, well, Bennett, he said, I've got to put you on charges, everything that I can get. He said the skipper had left word for an ERA to be aboard. I said, but there's no instruction for an ERA to be aboard. He said, it doesn't matter, I'll have to do it. So I had six major charges against me. And up to that time, I hadn't had one day's stoppage of pay on anything. I'd got a clean, unblemished record. So when the other ERAs came aboard ship, of course I was in a bit of a state, white-faced. And it was this ERA Sheffield who said, well, don't worry, Lofty. He said, we'll go and have a look round. And he found out that the chief ERA hadn't put any instructions in his book. The officer of the day had got nothing in his instructions to the petty officer, you know, the bosun. There was no one on the gangway. And when we looked in the ship's log, there was nothing in the log, which was serious enough, because the state of the ship has always got to be logged in the logbook. So when we went back to the mess, he said, I think you'll find there'll be too many people involved for it to go any further. And it was quite true. When I went to officers Jimmy, the one's charge, table. The following day, he scrubbed the charges. And I heard nothing more until Captain Brown sent for me in his cabin when we were at sea. And gave me a really good telling off.
It wasn't particularly fair, really.
No, because... No, I'd made my mind up what to do when I got up. I'd never known anybody to be sent to the captain's cabin, in any case. I'd never known anybody to have to go there. And I made my mind up to say yes, sir, and no, sir. And that's what I did. But I had to be very careful then, because he was a spiteful man.
So you just got a reprimand and nothing on your record?
No, nothing on my record. They couldn't, but he couldn't charge me because half the ship's company were, half the officers were involved.
Now what?
And his own inefficiency in not leaving any reasons for an ERA. No one knew of any reason whatsoever that an ERA should be aboard. I think it was he'd got a down on ERAs. He was an upper deck type of, and maybe he'd had a run-in with the engineering branch. I don't know.
Now this was lieutenant. He was, although he was left just a lieutenant, he was the skipper.
Yes. Yes.
What was he like then? You've said a couple of things. I don't think you liked him as much as the others.
He wasn't as efficient. He wasn't as reliable. I don't think as he hadn't got the experience either. You know, I think it was his first ship.
So he was. Not,
I think it was his first command.
He was not tactically as competent?
No.
And you say, I mean, you obviously didn't like him personally much either.
Well, I didn't like him personally after that, because I think it was the wrong thing to do. I think he'd have approached it in a proper manner. He could have done it quite technically, if he'd have wanted to. But, no.
Now, the next thing is a D-Day operation. So you seem to be based at Portsmouth for a while, but this is the Operation Neptune. What do you remember of your role during the D-Day operation, 6th of June?
I can remember just sailing and just being one of the hundreds and hundreds of ships that were on the D-Day landings.
Did anything happen?
We were one of the first in, as you know, with the inboard type, the assault troops. We were in with the assault troops, but the bombardment for D-Day landings was absolutely terrific. They had battleships and cruisers and giving it a hell of a pasting before we went on that morning. The most memorable occasion I have is that we'd heard that we'd had six minesweepers, only small boats, you know. We'd had six minesweepers off Lee Har, sweeping for mines, all through the night before the landings, and at the crack of light, there was a squadron of I can't remember the type of aircraft, came over and mistook them for German boats and wiped them out. And I can always fancy being working like that all through the night, sweeping mines up, and then being wiped out by your own.
Was it the RAF or the Americans?
I don't think it was the Americans.